Now calling A23 1023 in the matter of the welfare of the children of MSI and JJ parents.
And counsel, as you probably know, you'll each have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and appellant's counsel will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a clock in one of the squares on your screen. Can you both see that? Okay. So that will reset according to the time that you have for your argument. And I would ask each of you to please introduce yourself and your client at the beginning of your argument so that we know who you are and who you're representing. And if there are any other pronunciation or pronoun information that we need, please feel free to share that with us. In addition, please mute when you are not speaking so that we can ensure that we hear the person who is arguing. And if you have any difficulty with the technology, just let me know and we will pause and see if we can rectify that. We want to make sure that we hear from everybody today. So, with that, appellant's counsel, please begin when you are ready.
Thank you. Again, Attorney Benjamin Koss on behalf of the appellant, who is Michaela Schmidt-Engels. May it please the court and opposing counsel, I do not foresee myself taking up my 15 minutes or rebuttal here this morning. This matter has been thoroughly briefed, in my opinion. There's only really two principal points that I wish to address with the court this morning outside of what has already been submitted on behalf of Ms. Schmidt-Engels. And having in mind that, well, my client certainly feels as though the district court reached the incorrect conclusion in this matter, I am certainly well aware that we're not here to retry the entire case or that this court is going to sub its judgment for the district court. But when it comes to the three statutory allegations here, the first one I seek to address this morning is underneath 263.301 subdivision 1B2, when we're talking about particular findings that need to be made. And as opposing counsel pointed out, perhaps my written argument was not fully developed on this point. However, the contention remains, even without case law, that the county and the court didn't make appropriate findings when it came to Ms. Michaela Schmidt-Engels' physical or financial ability to care for her children by the time we reached the end of the case in June of 2023 this year. The evidence was, I think, very focused on my client's use of cannabis or marijuana products, as well as her mental health. I don't think that there was a showing when it came to what she had done wrong in this particular case to warrant a termination, that she was physically unable to meet the demands of the children or financially unable to meet the demands of the children. Certainly, Dr. Vassarella weighed in, and she did opine that it would be good for Ms. Schmidt-Engels to take and get a job to help her case. But even Dr. Vassarella took and testified that that wasn't central here, as it was more of a confidence booster for Ms. Schmidt-Engels than anything else. So I argue in this instance that it's fatal underneath 1B2 because not all of the elements of that statutory criteria have been met. Secondly, the argument that's advanced here this morning when it takes and comes to the use of marijuana is, again, by the time this case had reached its end, the Minnesota legislature had shifted its approach to the use of marijuana as well as marijuana-type products. And I don't know that my client's use of marijuana was necessarily central to this. And I think that there was testimony in this case that, well, I think there was evidence submitted that, but for even with her marijuana use, the county was considering returning the children to her care if she would have separated from Mr. Jacob Johnson in this case. So,
Mr. Casa, I don't perceive, at least based on my review of the record, that the cannabis use was central to the termination decision. It certainly was noted, but it also seemed to me that the caseworkers were very willing to, as you noted, work with her. despite the positive tests that were occurring, at least, in the beginning of the case. What I'm hoping you can address are the other issues, the other factors that or facts that the district court relied on in making the determination decision. It's specifically the sort of steep drop off in follow through on the services, the failure to meet with the counselor, the failure to check off some objectives that your client initially was doing pretty well with complying with.
Yeah, and Your Honor, I hear you're urging to let go of the point concerning marijuana. And before I do that, I think I would suggest that because there was no or limited concerns about the marijuana, that might serve to undercut the finding underneath 1B5 when it came to the chemical treatment. So that's the legal argument that I have to offer on that. With regard to the what I think Your Honor is saying with regard to the case plan and therefore the performance on the case plan, as you can see from the record, there was a sizable shift in everybody's approach, be it my clients, Mr. Johnson's, as well as the county, once June of 2022 arrived. And there seems to be this stutter stop that occurred. And that's what my client is pointing to say, look, she substantially complied. She had enough, even despite the hiccup in services that occurred after June of this year. So, and I think that's just, it's not going to be prudent here this morning to really get beyond that. And that's where the substantial compliance issue, and as opposing counsel points out, I've taken a look at a mechanics lien case, the Ilajari case, just to back up the issue of substantial compliance and say that she got most of the way there. Aside from these brief oral comments to the panel, I really have nothing further, and I do feel that this matter's been adequately briefed, even though between opposing counsel and I, our combined briefs didn't add up to what the district court made in terms of 78 pages of comprehensive findings.
I do have one question for you, Mr. Casa. Just getting back to your argument about subdivision 1B2, and in your brief, I just want to make sure I understand your argument. So that provision provides that if a parent has neglected their duties, and the parent was physically and financially able to do the things that they've neglected, then it could be a basis for termination. And you say that is it your argument that the district court failed to make findings that and should have found that your client is physically and financially unable to perform the duties of parenting?
That is the precise argument, Your Honor. And even having in mind that the county offered evidence in this case that it provided cell phone minutes and cell service, I still think that there was a lack of findings by the district court, maybe acknowledging that there was no evidence put forward by the county on a specific point, but the lack of findings on that phrase of if the parent is physically and financially able, I would take the position that that's fatal on this particular provision.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Casa. And now we will turn to Respondents' Counsel for argument. The clock is being reset, and Ms. Yankowski, you can begin when you are ready, and the clock reads 15 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court and counsel. My name is Sarah Yankowski, and I represent Respondent St. Louis County Public Health and Human Services Department. We are asking that the court affirm the district court's order terminating appellant's parental rights. District court properly found that three statutory bases for termination existed and have been proven, and that the agency provided appellant with reasonable efforts, as well as the finding that termination of parental rights was in the children's best interest. I do want to turn briefly to Mr. Koss's major points just now. I agree, I likely also won't take a full 15 minutes. As to the issue of the THC and cannabis legality, I would note that in that initial part of the case, I think I agree with everyone's assessment that the marijuana use wasn't the major block to anything. And indeed, the agency was working towards starting that trial home visit that was kind of referenced up in June 2022. And then, of course, the big kind of disengagement period happened. As noted, though, in December of 2022, appellant did complete also a substance use assessment that did diagnose her with severe cannabis use disorder and recommended intensive outpatient treatment. That was admitted into evidence at the trial as Exhibit 10. And so, much like with alcohol and other legal substance, some people do still end up having a substance use disorder related to that particular substance. So, I do just want to address that piece of that as well. With respect to the issue of the findings relevant to 1B2, I do agree that the district court does not explicitly say anywhere in that order that either the mother is financially able or is not financially able to provide for the children. And I don't know that she made that there was a, I don't believe there's a specific finding that said physically able to or not physically able to. I would, however, note that the court did find that the parents were able to use the services and engage in their plan, I guess appellant in particular. We know that the court found or believed that because the court had authorized that trial home visit in June of 2022. There was testimony in the underlying record that the ongoing social worker would not have viewed employment as a barrier or a lack of employment as a barrier to reunification. I believe the testimony noted that many parents in the child protection system are unemployed. And so that's not a reason to not have parents have their children in their care. And I believe the appellant also testified that she believed her access to public assistance enabled her to financially care for her children. I do also note that, like
Ms.
within that, sorry.
Yankowski, I'm just going to interrupt you with a question. So, of course, the appellate court is permitted to affirm a termination if it concludes that the district court, did not abuse its discretion as to finding just one ground. And here, of course, the district court found three grounds for termination. And I'm just wondering, in your view, what the strongest ground for the termination decision was under the circumstances of this case.
Sure, thank you, Your Honor. I would certainly suggest that B8, that the children were neglected and in foster care, would be the strongest. I do think that, frankly, equally strong is B5, the failure of the case plan to correct the conditions that led to the out-of-home placement. From my view, this is under B5, the agency wasn't fully focused on the failure of chemical dependency, but we were focusing on the first part of that statute, right? The case plan as a whole. I think that there was ample testimony and the record that certainly supported the court in finding that the children had been placed in out-of-home placement by court order. Both children had been in out-of-home placement for over 500 days as of the date of trial. The case plan was found to be reasonable. It had been submitted to the court within 30 days as required by statute. And the court was to consider not just how the parent did at the beginning of the case, of course, but how the parent engaged in their plan as of the date of trial. And as of the date of trial, as noted, appellant wasn't participating in mental health services except for psychiatry. She wasn't engaged in chemical dependency treatment. She was not cooperating with the agency in communication. She was going to visits. I think everyone noted throughout the entire case, she did attend visits and they went well. But she was not engaged in a variety of those other supportive services that fall under the mental health umbrella, adult rehabilitative mental health services, case management, individual therapy, couples counseling with her partner, who she remained with at the time of trial. So she really didn't engage in her case plan in a substantial way. I think ultimately, it's also important to remember that these two children are incredibly young. The younger child is 2 years old, the older child is 3 years old. They require a parent who is able to meet their needs on a 24-hour, 365 basis. And so when looking at that substantial compliance with a case plan, it's very different kind of a standard than one would employ in a contract case or something like that. So the agency felt that that is a very different standard than was otherwise cited in the briefing. Other than that, because the district court's
Can
order, yeah.
I? I'm not sure I followed what you just said about a standard being different.
I was referencing simply that I think it's, I'm not sure how to even say it, Your Honor, Yildari case that was cited. But that standard of definition for substantial compliance with a case plan,
Oh, I
I
see.
don't believe
Thanks.
is applicable here. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. Beyond
And
that,
let me just to
yeah.
follow up on that point. I mean, substantial compliance with the case plan in this area of the law is not, to be very colloquial, it's not a thing, right?
Correct, correct. And it hasn't been ever defined in any way by the court that I'm aware of. And I think that that's logically because these cases are so fact specific, right? You have to look at what the parents' needs were, what caused the out of home placement. You have to look at the children's individualized needs, which is informed by not only like their mental health needs, any trauma they've experienced, but also their ages. Of course, a parent would have very different safety concerns with a 15-year-old than with a 2 and a 3-year-old. So I think that these cases just don't really lend themselves to a bright line rule, and that's why one doesn't really exist in this area of law. Okay. Because the district court's order is supported by the record, I would ask that the order be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Yankowski. And we'll have the clock reset for 5 minutes. It is now we turn to Mr. Casa for rebuttal, and you have 5 minutes, and you may begin when you are ready.
Your Honor, I appreciate the opportunity for rebuttal, but as I noted at the outset, I am going to decline to take that at this point. I feel that all of my legal arguments have been fairly made, and anything else is certainly addressed within my brief.
Okay, thank you. And I don't see any further questions from the panel either. So, with that, I want to thank each of you for your argument here today. We certainly appreciate it. It is very helpful to the court. So, thank you for your briefs and your argument. The case is submitted, and an opinion will be issued within the statutory timeframe. Thank you.